हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनाभुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासवि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे।
Okay, although it is neither has neither beginning nor end, matter is situated within the confines of time and space. The author describes this in the following two sutras. Right? Because we've established that the matter is eternal, but at the same time as then if it's eternal, what's the problem? Right? So the difficulty is, even though it's eternal, it is situated within time and space. That means it will be affected by these two qualities, which don't work so well for the needs of the soul, right? Because the point is you have a relationship with something that is manifest, not with something that's not manifest, right? So whatever is important to you within the world, whatever your relationships are based upon, that will be temporary. That doesn't work properly with the soul. Does that make sense? Right. And then because of this mundaneness, then there's always that thing of the space and trying to work out, you know, what's here and what's there, and the spiritual world's there, and then we're here, and this is over there. And so this gets in the way, just like understanding that the spiritual world, the material world are at the same place at the same time, you know, in the Lord's, you know, pastimes, you know, within the material world. Then becomes hard to understand because of this. Because then if it's within the same sphere as this, it's controlled by space and time, which it's not. The Dham can be unlimited and at the same time be within a finite area of the material world. And those that are spiritual, that are part of the Lord's pastime, they can be working under Yoga Maya and performing their, you know, transcendental pastimes. At the same time, someone under the control of the modes of nature in the material world can be in the same pastime, and they can all be interacting and talking to each other. Right? This becomes hard to understand because of this concept of time and space. Right? Yes. Sorry? What page? I thought you said something about Pejwar Swami. You know what I'm saying? You know, what page we're on? Like that, I heard Pejwar Swami.
Pejwar Swami.
He's, how you say? One of the eight Madhvacharya, you know, heads of one of the eight mutts who's favorable to the society, to us. What page we're on? Page 45. Okay, so that means it's 9, so it's very auspicious. Not the other pages of the book are inauspicious, just happen to be. That's different. Okay, Sutta 25. Time is not another major category of existence. It is the intermediary that establishes the relationship between the conditioned souls and the material world. Right? It's not a major factor. It's part of the thing, but it is what causes the relationship between the material world and the soul, because it works on time. Then you're going to be interacting, because time means activity also. You know what I'm saying? The mundane mundane activity works on this time, this mundane time. That, therefore, how you say, the actions then come within that purview. But the spiritual, the actions are dealing with spiritual time, which is not actually like here. It's just like a chronological sequence. It's an experience. know what I'm saying? You know, the kid in the back of the car going on the long trip, you know, after 30 seconds ask, are we there yet? And you say, no, we have another, 5 hours. And another 30 seconds later, go, are we there yet? You know, like that. That's because they're working on experience. They have no concept of time. You understand? So that is, the spiritual world works on this. So there's a certain amount of time that generates an experience. But that, depending on what it is longer or shorter. It doesn't matter. Therefore, the gopis here in Boma Lila are dancing for one night of Brahma. At the same time, it's within the confines of an earthly night. You know? So these become the difficulties of putting these two together. Therefore, you generally talk one or the other. That works, right? Probably they'll experience it about half a nanosecond. You know what I'm saying? That's the problem. But they will have been together that long, you know. But the point is, no matter how long it is, it will always be too short. You know, so it's they're afforded a little bit more than a few hours. Okay, commentary by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Some claim that time is a major category of existence, and they quote the following words of Markandeya Purana to support their idea. Quote, in the form of seconds, minutes, and other parts of its nature, time changes everything in the material world. The idea that time is a major category of existence is rejected by the sutra. Time is not a major category. It is merely an intermediary who establishes a relationship. In Sandilya's Bhakti Sutra, it is said, quote, the major categories are spirit, two, matter, and there is no third. Yeah, but he notices that this is used in the Vedas. When the Vedas use this, it means it is that way. There's no other perspective. Like it says, there's Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras, there is no fifth order. So when the Vedas say that, it means that. It's not that, well, you could look at it this way or that way, because so many things in the Vedas have many, many perspectives you can look at it, right? Depending upon which aspect you're bringing out. Does that make sense? But in here, when they do this method, that means there's no discussion. It's don't even bring it up as a topic, because there isn't. There's the living entity, and there's matter. Right? Or here, spirit can actually mean the Lord, the living entity, and matter. They're saying that's all there is. There isn't time, is not, because the point is time is Krishna. So therefore, Krishna created, because we say, oh, the time is so important, but that establishes you with what's here. Right? But if you go up to the heavenly planets, their time is completely different. It won't work on your time. You know, for a bug, you know, they live a full, long life in one night around a light bulb. Right? And then there's other living entities that only last a few hours. You know, and they've gone through a whole, family, and their dynasty is, expanded and that, and sometimes you call them a cold. You know what I'm saying? So, like that, then, how one can't take time as a major category. It's something minor within the relationship, because the living entity is trying to establish that relationship, and time is used as the intermediary. So therefore, you're born, you're there, you die. Right? It's all happening in time. You perform an activity, with time you'll get the result. So it's simply an intermediary between the living entity and the material world. Does that make sense? Like that. So here it's saying a major category. So in the Gita, it will mention time as a factor. Because it's body, but karma is also a factor. Right? Does that make sense? But that can disappear if we take up Krishna consciousness. So therefore, it's not actually a main category. It's important for the relationship with the material world. Right? Does that make sense? But the point is this time and this karma go away. So the Lord, Chit Achit Ishwara remains, but Kala and Karma, they disappear. Right? Does that make sense? Because if you perform an activity where the result is not for yourself, it's for Krishna, that means there is no karma. Right? So, therefore, in the same way, is it's being performed for the Lord, that activity, the results of it are eternal. Therefore, there's no time. So time is only a factor in relationship with the material world. Does that make sense? Is this okay? Because it doesn't look like it's an important point, but the thing is we bring time into it all the time. Oh, when did I fall? When did it this? When did it? It's always this time and space. What we're trying to point out is this isn't the major thing. Right? Because if you let that be as part of your analyzation of the philosophy and trying to apply it on your life, then you'll come up with some problems. Because generally, as soon as you bring in time and all that and space, then you're going to end up with karma. Right? Because karma is action, which means time. So when time is applied without the modes of nature, then you're free from the material world. But if time is applied with the modes of nature, you're bound to the material world. Right? So time is the point of where you either bind with the material world or you're freed from the material world. Because time is action. You know what I'm saying? So your action is material, you will be bound material. So the action is based on time. And then with time, you're bound. So if time is applied without mundane purpose, then you're not bound in the world. You're actually free. Right? Does this make any sense? So that's why it's important not to include it in your understanding of spiritual subject matter. You know what I'm saying? It's a factor for interaction with the material world. Right? So time, place, circumstance, you have to apply it. But it's for how to interact with what is about around you. Right? So in the spiritual world, they also work on this principle, but it's spiritual time. So it has nothing to do. Time and space, they move according to the Lord's pleasure. Does that make sense? He walks out of Vrindavan, and he's in, next to the Jamuna. He walks out of Nandagram, he's with the Jamuna. If we walked out of Nandagram, I'm not sure if we'd be there by the evening time. And they're there in the morning, in time to play leapfrog and this and that, and have, play with the lunches, have the lunches, and for Krishna to disappear off with the gopis like that, and then come back in the, late afternoon, and then get back with the cowherd boys, and then walk back, just in time for Mother Yashoda to greet Krishna. So we're not talking about space here. This doesn't make sense. But it appears there's space. Right? Because time and space are for relating to the situation. But they aren't actually the factor. It serves the lila. While here we're bound by it. We're here, we're forced, we're bound by time and space. While there we're not. Right? There it serves the pastime. That's why it says, there's no time, in Brahma Samhita. But it appears there's time. Just like in Goloka, the gopis, it appears they have husbands, but they don't. So like that. They're there for the pastime. It's like the kids, they get together and, get some things, wrap it around their head, get some sticks, and then they're kings and ministers and generals and all that kind of things, and they have fights and, all kinds of things happen. But it doesn't happen, it's only an experience. So in the kids' mind, they see all that happening. The adults just see a bunch of kids. Does that make sense? So there, what Krishna thinks is real. So its experience is real. But it's not bound by time and space. It serves Krishna's purpose. In other words, his pastimes with the devotees. Is that okay? In Srimad Bhagavatam 3:26.16, Lord Kapila explains, quote, "The influence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is felt in the time factor. which causes fear of death due to the false ego of the deluded soul who has contracted material nature, or contacted material nature. Okay, so the Lord is there as the time factor, like he says, time I am, because time then creates fear, because fear means, you know, loss of your identity. So people become afraid of death because of the time factor. So it's the Lord only. So that fear, all that of all that, that's still the Lord. Like that. So there's no time when the living entity is not actually in touch with the Lord. Problem is he does not understand this. Right? That's why it's called mind.
It seems like you just got an incredibly important point there, that actually fear of death is actually fear of losing identity. We sometimes think people fear from death due to pain or some other thing.
It's loss of identity, because people go through a lot of pain for relationship or identity. You know, the guy will go out there and, you know, do so much exercise or, you know, run for miles. You know, it's the guys that do these long distance running. It's not that it's not painful. The guys that climb mountains or do all these extreme kind of sports, it's not that it's not painful. Or people work so hard to, you know, make so much facility and money. It's not that it's not painful. But that doesn't bother them because it maintains or enhances their identity. I'm a mountain climber, therefore when I climb the mountain, even though in the process, you know, my two toes froze off and my nose, you know, hey, you know, but it's still, when you come back, you know, people are going to ask, you know, what happened to your finger? You know, well, I lost it when I was climbing Everest. You know, it's kind of like, yeah, cool, you know, like that, you know, rather than, you know, yeah, I forgot the, you know, the door closed on it, you know. So, you know, that, then, you know, nobody cares. You know? But it's like this. So it still maintains his identity. So actually fear comes from not wanting to recognize your relationship with the Lord. So therefore, because you're unwilling to do that, the Lord comes to you as time. And so you still have to recognize your relationship with time, that, oh, I got 100 years, or I only have 90, or not only have, you know, like that. You know what I'm saying? So you're still identifying and relating with the Lord, but it's, you know, it's not noted. You know what I'm saying? It's like the, yeah, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that why devotees don't, that's the cross point of why devotees don't do that?
Yeah, they don't, because being fearless means you're not afraid of being a servant of Krishna. You're not afraid of losing the identity, I'm the controller and enjoyer. Yes?
What kind of fear experiencing gopas when demons attacking them or devastating
part
of gopas, cowboys?
Because if something happens to them, that means something happens to their relationship with Krishna. So it'll look the same, but it's actually different. You know what I'm saying? Is in the material world, you're afraid of death because this is who I am, and therefore I'll lose that, and then my ability to control and enjoy in this world. But for the coward boys, it would be, if something happens to them, then their relationship with Krishna is not working. You know, they can't interact in their relationship. They can't perform their service. You know what I'm saying? That's the fun part, is what goes on in the spiritual world is, or let's say it the other way, what goes on here looks the same as the spiritual world, but it's perverted. It's generally opposite. That's why it says perverted reflection. A reflection looks exactly the same, but it's upside down. So it means their whole motives and everything are wrong, because everything of importance in the spiritual world is Krishna and related to Krishna. So here, everything is not related to Krishna. So that's the perversion. Though it looks the same. Right? So that's why in the Vedic culture, then they work off the same principles of the spiritual world. They use the spiritual world's dress and clothes and ways of, you know, eating and food and you know, things of etiquette and, you know, the lifestyle and all the different things, because all that it's the same thing, but the Vedic culture is trying to take that reflected form, that nicely reflected form, and reform the perversion into actual reality. That's why those are mentioned, because then it's so nice and close and it matches so well. But even if you can't get that proper reflection, it doesn't mean you can't rectify the perversion. Right? So that's why the statement of it's Kali Yuga, Vedic culture doesn't work, is just so much nonsense, because they don't even know what they're talking about. The Vedic means, the point is that you're trying, Vedic culture is how to rectify the living entity, bring him to transcendental consciousness. You know, and to do that, the nicest form is what is closest to the spiritual world. Does that make sense? That's why those things are done. You know, and you can do it. Anybody decides on doing something, you have a whole culture. You know, it's not like it doesn't happen. It means, you take 1960s, right? Everybody was wearing their, you know, suit and tie and this and that and stuff like that, and a bunch of people coming along wearing old clothes. Everybody had nice slick back, you know, greased hair, and then just long hair. You know, everybody, you know, tried to look very proper and everything, and these guys didn't at all. And there were millions of them. So it's a counterculture. So it was going on. It was going on right at the same time the other one's going on. You know what I'm saying? So if people follow it, it's a culture. It's there. So this thing, oh, it can't be done. That's for losers. Or, probably worse, for the insincere. Or, how do you say? The cheaters. Because they don't want to follow it. And then their ego is so big, they therefore will say it can't be followed. You know, if I can't do it, nobody can do it. Or if I don't want to do it, why should anybody else be doing it? Because if someone else does it, means it can be done and I should be doing it because it's recommended. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, but applying the Vedic means applying it to time, place, and circumstance. So you have to know what's actually, because it's not the rule, it's the purpose of the rule. Does that make sense? Is that okay? Yeah. Sutra 26. Matter provides a dwelling place for the conditioned souls. This place is called the three dimensions of material space. Commentary by Śrīla Bhaktivinoda Thakura. Matter provides a dwelling place for the conditioned souls. This place is called, quote, the three dimensions of material space, unquote. An example of material space is given in these words of the Svetasvatara Upanishad 4:6-7. Quote, although the two birds are on the same tree, the eating bird is fully engrossed with anxiety and moroseness as the enjoyer of the fruits of the tree. The tree here is the material dwelling place, the body of the conditioned soul. Many philosophers assert that the element earth is the resting place of the other material elements. This is described in the following words of the Mukunda Upanishad, 2.1.3. Quote, from the Supreme Personality of Godhead are born life, mind, all the senses, ether, air, fire, and water. All these rest on the element earth. So in other words, with earth, that's what you're going to see. That's what actually is going to be the medium through which it's enacted. Does that make sense? So the whole relationship is based on that. You know, what is the manifestation that you can see is based on earth. Does that make sense? So everything is connected to the earth in some way. It's also the last of all the elements. That means it already contains everything else. That's why it's the grossest, because it contains everything else, right? And at the same time, as the catalyst that changes one element to the next, is the introduction of false ego. So you add false ego to ether, then you get, or to mind, you get ether. You add again false ego, then you get air. You again add false ego, you get fire. You again add it, you get water. You again add it, you get earth. So that means the earth, that has the maximum amount of ego. That's why what you can see one is the most proud of. Right? The more subtle it goes back, then, you know, slightly less.
Is that somehow related to the fact that this fruitive activity plane, where all the sacrifices are done, is primarily
there? Is that primarily to do with earth? It's talking about the element rather than the specific sphere of existence. because we discussed before, earth is a set of you know, how you say, atoms that are always existent, and then they're pulled together around the mind and senses to actually manifest the those desires. In other words, the gross comes from the subtle, right? There's an experience that the mind wants to gain, so the mind then groups all the body around that to obtain that. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, even there we're doing the principle of the what is wanting to be obtained, that's actually Krishna. Then you arrange or take part in arranging the form of it, which is Lakshmi. Then the problem is with that arrangement, then we use Lakshmi to try to get that pleasure for ourselves, when actually it should be for Krishna. You know what I'm saying? So that's the problem. So that's why then the energy is dead matter, non-conscious. That way it won't be disturbed that you're trying to enjoy it. Right? The spiritual energy would not be very pleased. Does that make sense? Okay, so now we've developed, we did time here, and then space. Right? So that's two. So the space then is giving... that means time is what is creating how you say that fear, or that where you're interacting with it, and then the gross form of it is done by space. So what it is in space, then that's what you are basically attached to, and that you're afraid of losing by time. You know what I'm saying? But in actuality, it's experience that you're looking for. So that experience then is you basically your connection with both of those. That experience you want, therefore there's a form to get it. And that experience you want is being, having gotten through that form, you're afraid of losing it with due to the influence of time. So with time you work with that form to get that experience. And because of time you're afraid of losing it and losing that experience. Does that make sense? Yes. Means to kind of like you walk up and you, you know, do the thing, you know, do all that, and then put in the ego, and that's like that. Is that you're wondering how that's done or something? Means like it's a catalyst. Like you have milk and you put lemon in it, and then it turns into paneer, right? So like that, false ego is the catalyst in the material world, because everything here is based on ignorance. So as you add more ignorance to ether, then it becomes a little more gross and becomes air. You add a little bit more ignorance and it becomes fire. More ignorance, it becomes water. More ignorance, it becomes earth. Okay? Like that. So it's just, it's the catalyst. When the jivas are in the Lord's glance, come into the material world, that glance is actually ego. Right? So they come with ego and time. And that ego is, I'm the controller and enjoyer. So it gets more and more gross, because here's what you can control and enjoy, right? Does that make sense? The grosser it is, the more it's there. Water can go away, fire goes, air moves also, ether is just the space, but earth, you know. When you go out and buy something, you buy earth. You know what I'm saying? Everything you buy and deal with is earth. It may have a connection with water and this and that, but you buy earth. You know what I'm saying? You may say, well, what if I... No, but I buy a bottle of water. But what you're buying is the bottle. The water comes along with it. Because if you just were buying water, where would you put it? You know what I'm saying? It's very interesting, the Vedic perceptions are so... They're talking about the same thing, but they're so different. You know what I'm saying? But they're, at the same time, you see, they're so consistent. Right? Okay. In a previous mantra, Mundaka Upanishad 2.12, it is said, quote, "The Supreme Personality of Godhead is effulgent. and transcendental. He is unborn. He is present everywhere in the material world. He is within and without everything. His form is not material. His life force is not material. His mind is not material. He is supremely glorious. He is greater than the immortal spirit souls. Right, so now we're establishing the Lord is beyond all these things. We just did time and space and how all those relationships and everything's there. So Krishna's entered into everything and then acts in that way, but at the same time, he is beyond that. He's untouched by it. In the Markandeya Purana, it is said, O material potency of the Lord, you are the resting place of the entire universe. In the next sutra, the author reveals the many delusions that bewilder the conditioned souls. Because of attachment to inert matter, the conditioned soul is bewildered about happiness and about the spiritual world. So it's this attachment. Remember, we've come back to all these points. Previously, we were talking about the soul, that it all boils down to attachment, right? The living entity is dependent, so it's going to be attached. Right? So then, that attachment, if it's connected to Krishna, then you're situated spiritually. If it's connected to the material world, then you're situated materially. Does this make sense? So it all comes back to this, right? So that means he's bewildered about happiness because he is looking for happiness that is not here, right? The soul inherently, inherently is imbued with Brahmananda. Its natural form of happiness is prema, but it's imbued, it comes with, right? You know, like you get a machine, its batteries included. Right, so it comes with Brahmananda, otherwise how it will be bliss. So that means everything in the material world will not live up to that. So it doesn't matter what you get, it won't add up to it. Right? And the concept of the living entity in the material world of monism or of Brahmananda is still material. It's not that Brahmananda. Because that Brahmananda is in connection with Parabrahman. So it's Parabrahmananda. You know what I'm saying? It's a connection with the Lord. Does that make sense? So, therefore, their concept is still material because it's temporary. But the Brahmananda of the soul is eternally its nature. So that's not, you can't change that. Right? But in connection with the Lord, then that manifests as prema. Otherwise, it's just... Does that make sense? So... The Lord... Yeah. Okay. And so that means he's bewildered about the spiritual world because his attachment to the material world makes it that it gets in the way of his interacting with the spiritual world. So that's basically all we're coming down to, is our desire. Okay, so now... Prabhupada's going to talk about Vaikuntha Brahma and Ananda Brahma. Because, what's his name? Wow. Okay, 2 pages. This is 27, right? Okay, so then we're going to... We'll start with Bhaktivinoda, of course, commentary, right? Do you remember why I said we're doing it this way? It's written like this, but means for the next printing of it, it'll be put the other way. If we read Prabhupada's first, it makes sense that, oh yeah, we've heard that, and then we just go on. Then we... Bhaktivinoda Thakur says it, and then we think, oh, this is some new light, right? But our studies are in line with the principle that Rupa Goswami gives in the 6th chapter of Nectar Devotion, where he says one should approach the previous acharyas through your acharya. Right? Does that make sense? So what we're doing is, here is, we're studying the previous acharyas because they're giving it in a very technical way. Right? So as long as one's accustomed to the technical presentation, then, you know, one understands the point. Then one will tend to think, this is something new. I haven't heard this. Then when we, after having done that, read the relevant parts from Prabhupada's books, then we'll see Prabhupada is saying the exact same thing, but in a common language that we can easily relate to. Right? Then we understand how Srila Prabhupada is saying what the previous acharyas, then we can actually appreciate and apply what Bhaktivinoda Thakur has said here. Otherwise, if we appreciate Bhaktivinoda Thakur and think it's more than what Srila Prabhupada's given, we're not actually approaching Bhaktivinoda Thakur. You know what I'm saying? So because of this, then we're turning it around. Because it's a very common mistake that can be made. But Prabhupada says, sometimes he says it so succinctly. The acharyas will say so many things, and he'll say, just get to the essence, say it very simply. Like that. So does that make sense? So that's why we're using this method. Like that. Because someone would say, well, if you approach the previous acharyas, you'd read your acharyas thing first. But if you notice when there's commentaries, where do they go? After, right? You have the verse, then where's the commentary? After the verse. Where's the commentary on that commentary? After that. You know what I'm saying? So sometimes there may be three or four commentaries on the verse, each one following in the footsteps of the last, because something is just not as clear. You know? Like that. So then it's just being brought out. Does that make sense? So that's why it's being done that way. The conditioned soul is bewildered about happiness because he is attracted to the material world. He thinks he will find happiness in the material world, in Svarga Loka, in an excellent material body, or in some other way. Because, okay, so that's where he's going to find happiness, either in Svarga or in some other way. But in any case, it's going to be here, and it's going to be now. Right? You know? Like that. Because he is attached to the objects in this material world, he is also bewildered about the Supreme Personality of Godhead and about the transcendental abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In Srimad Bhagavatam 3:10:26, the Supreme Personality of Godhead declares. Now he's saying about his abode, because we were talking about that this is still within the section of the material world. Right? So because of our attachment to the material world here, that creates our bewilderment about the spiritual world. Because here is a reflection of there, but we try to make there a reflection of here. You know, in other words, if I just take what's here and adjust it, you know, then it'll be perfect like the spiritual world. Right? Thy kingdom come, thy will be done. So, does that make sense? Heaven on earth, goodwill to men. Right? All you're doing is working out the problems here, and then it's suddenly the spirit. No, it's because you connected it to God. That's what makes it spiritual. You know what I'm saying? So the attachment in the material world, you try to bring the perfection of the spiritual world, means no time and no space here. But you do it through the medium of time and space. And so that's the problem, is everything about you just become bewildered, and so spiritual life doesn't come naturally to the conditioned soul. That's why it must be heard from authority. When it comes from parampara, from the authority, then the spiritual understanding can be given to the living entity, and he can actually work with that because of the chit potency. He becomes empowered by the chit potency. But otherwise, the mundane mind with the mundane facilities here, one will never come up, never, never come up with a bona fide philosophy. Right? Even if you have a million monkeys sitting behind computers and typing, they still won't come up with Bhagavad Gita. Right? Like that. That goes into the category of how many angels dance on the head of a pin, and you know, the tree falls in the forest, no one's there, where you hear the sound, what's the sound of one hand clapping, and all those kind of things. It goes in that category. Okay. So the Supreme Lord declares in Bhagavatam 3:10:26, in the human race, the mode of passion is very prominent. Humans are always busy in the midst of miserable life, but they think themselves happy in all respects. In the Katha Upanishad 1:1:12, Nachiketa tells Yamaraj, the Lord of Death, quote, in the spiritual world there is not fear of old age or of you, O Death. There one crosses beyond both of them. In the spiritual world there is no anxiety to attain food and drink. The residents of the spiritual world enjoy transcendental bliss. Right? Does this understand why the emphasis, now here, this mode of passion, are always busy in the midst of miserable life. But the principle, so Arjuna, understanding this, what was his first inclination? What was his first solution? Go to the forest, do nothing. Right? So that's a problem. Why is he going to do something? Because he wants something, he needs something. Then only he'll do something, so therefore the mode of passion. But now in the spiritual world, it's still based on human culture. Right? Because the human culture actually comes from there. But what is the difference? You understand? There, they're always engaged in activity, but for Krishna's pleasure. While here, we're engaged for our own pleasure because of our attachment. If there's no attachment, there's no action. Right? That's why someone in a particular situation will say, no one else will understand the situation, because they're the ones involved in it. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, you know, typical is that Grihastha will feel that the sannyasi brahmachari cannot in any way, shape, or form understand what it means to be in Grihastha ashram because you're not attached, therefore you're not doing it. Or parents think you can't take care of children because you are not attached. So it's the mode of passion that drives them to act. It's not knowledge. Right? So if we're dealing with intelligence, first class is what you do by hearing. Second class is by seeing. Right? You can hear about the life and then come to an understanding. Or you can see the grihasthas are there performing their activities, they're working with the children. You can see. Third class, you have to do it yourself. So it's being promoted as third class intelligence. You know what I'm saying? So the drive is attachment, because the idea is if I'm not attached, I won't work. But that's why the spiritual world is the same thing, but the attachment is to Krishna. When you're attached to Krishna, then you're going to do everything to please Krishna. Then you'll always be active. Then there's no need of having to work. You know what I'm saying? So it says there's no one has to work, no anxiety for food and drink. Because if there was no anxiety for food and drink here, everyone would do nothing. You know what I'm saying? So, in the spiritual world, because everybody is very interested to please Krishna, therefore that's their occupation. The Sanatana Dharma is their pleasing of Krishna. Therefore, all facilities are granted. So if you're trying to please Krishna, then facilities are there. You want to do it yourself, you got to get it yourself. Yes? What is the line of distinction?
Like, once you gave an example of how the academic thinks his teacher who studies Buddhism knows Buddhism better than the Dalai Lama?
Yes. Yes. See, is you have knowledge which is gained by hearing, right? Then, when that knowledge is applied, you get understanding, right? And then when that is done regularly enough, that knowledge is applied with understanding, then you get realization, right? So the natural thing is through performance, through practice, you will get realization. Does that make sense? But the point is the application does not necessarily have to be gross. You know what I'm saying? it must be applied. The knowledge you get must be applied. You know what I'm saying? So someone, they hear this world is a place of death. You know, and it's kind of like, yeah, why be so morbid? You know? And then somebody, let's say, they work in a hospital or there's been a big calamity or they're in a war, then they start to notice maybe there's some truth. But if someone can take it and apply it and look around them and apply it into their world, then without having to do the activity or experience the gross aspect, they get an understanding. And if that's continued, they can get realization. Right? So if there's no attachment to it, then it can come through this method. If there's attachment, generally you have, because what the attachment is to the form. So therefore you have to work with the form. So that's why then you would be, you will use third class intelligence. But your purpose is for coming to first class. And saying it's not that third class stands on its own and that's that, no, it's not standard. But it's workable. Right? First class, second and third class are very usable. Fourth class is not. You experience, you still don't learn. So that's where the line of distinction comes. Right? Is that, so in other words, how, by hearing it and contemplating it, what method you need to do to apply it? Is you've heard about it, so therefore you contemplate it, and on that platform you understand it. Or you combine that with hearing and seeing. You know what I'm saying? You hear it, you can see it around you, so therefore it's solid. So when the shabda comes to pratyaksha, when the authority comes to, you know, ability to perceive it with the senses, then that is where you get realization. You understand? The other is understanding, but when you would actually, you know, you're able to realize it, then that's what you're looking for. Right? How do you determine the determination between, okay, determination and fourth class intelligence? That would be called stubbornness. Okay. Stubbornness means you're not applying your knowledge to the time, place, and circumstance. You're not actually understanding really the relationship. You know what I'm saying? Determination is you're seeing all that. And when you see that in line, you know, with it, so as you are applying it, you make adjustments if you need to get what your goal is. That's determination. Stubbornness means you just take the external and that's it, and you have no really idea of what you're trying to do. You're just going to do it that way, and so even all symptoms are you should do it another way. No, I've got to do it this way. That's stubbornness. So that's foolish. The determination is you have a goal, so you're going to get the goal with what you have. So therefore you apply the activity on what you have that is moving towards the goal. As soon as it's not moving towards the goal, you adjust it until it does. Is that okay? Oh, sorry, before I remember. Tomorrow there won't be any, I won't be giving any classes like that. So this class and the afternoon class tomorrow won't be happening. Also Mahabharata won't be happening. Okay. So, and then on, we'll just continue, means this will be continued on Monday. And in the evening class, I think we'll finish that tonight, this book, and then we'll move on to the six systems.
We have class this afternoon.
Yeah, this afternoon there'll be class, but tomorrow then none of the three classes will run.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhakti Brinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prema Nandi.